It's your boy Kirkland the Hot Dog. Welcome to the podcast. We got quite the show for you today. Oh, someone dropped a chip. Be right back. One sec.
We're here with Kirkland today.
What up? Finally, the shit that people actually want to hear. Let's go.
Kirkland, have you ever done a podcast before?
Never a podcast, no. We have tried live streaming, though. When you say guy with wiener, you attract kind of a weird crowd. So this is the first, yeah.
Kirkland, you're one of the more well-known dogs in Boston on social media.
Uh-huh.
You know, has the fame gotten to your head a little bit?
I'll be honest, even before the fame, I turned heads walking down the street, so for me it really wasn't that big of a difference.
Mm.
I don't know about him, though.
Oh, okay.
Don't look away.
Why are you looking at me?
Come on, bro. You love it when you get recognized.
In what ways could your dad improve?
Wow, I can answer that question all day. Well, definitely driving. He drives like a real asshole. Every time we get in the car, I puke.
Wow, spitting some drama right now.
That ain't the half of it.
Where's your fit from? Who you wearing?
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, the Kirkland Signature Drip. They named that shit after me. Thanks, Costco.
You said you graduated high school in 2014. Did you go to school right after that?
Yeah, so I went to college at the University of Michigan. So,
I went to Penn State.
No way.
Yeah.
All right. My best friend went to Penn State.
Okay.
But yeah, we used to go out there for every Penn State Michigan game.
Uh-huh.
And then they would come to Michigan for when it was home games there. So yeah, I studied business. I was actually one of the first in my family to go to college. My parents are both like from Italy, immigrated to the Boston area, when they were kids. So, so college was kind of new, but I kind of went where like the big schools that I knew, and I wanted to study business, and Michigan's business program was pretty big. So, that's what I ended up doing. And then I actually moved to New York City after college. I was working for PepsiCo at the time, working on Mountain Dew, and then spent 2 years there. COVID hit, moved back here, got a new job here, at my current company, Boston Beer. We own Sam Adams, Twisted Tea, Truly. So I was working on the Twisted Tea brand first, and then now I work on Truly. So that's kind of like my business path.
The background.
Yeah.
Are you a big Michigan football guy?
I am, yeah. I watch it still. I think it's tough here in Boston because, like, when I moved to New York, like, there was a lot bigger of a community there. I think, like, a lot of post-grads moved to, like, Chicago, L.A., New York. But Boston, it's a little bit tougher to find, like, a Michigan community, even though it is such a big school. So I watch more so, like, on my own or with, like, a few friends. But, like, when I lived in New York, there was, like, every Saturday was, like, a game day again going to, like, the Michigan bar. And, like, Boston doesn't really have that, so it's...
There's a lot of kids on the team right now, and, like, in the past, I would say, like, 5 to 8 years that are from Mass that play on Michigan football.
Yeah.
And there's some pretty... I mean, Zach Zinter, the guard on the O-line, he's going to be a very high draft pick this year.
Yeah.
Running backs, like, secondary. There's a lot of guys from Mass.
Yeah, yeah. So, a lot of time, I mean, Tom Brady is another vet. One of the guys I worked with at Pepsi, his... Like, big fun fact was that he beat out Tom Brady for Athlete of the Year at Michigan because he was a gymnast.
That's wild.
So that's always a funny story. But yeah, great football school, great overall, like, academic school. I'm very proud to have gone there. Obviously, this year was a big year, and getting that championship was something that I've been waiting for since I was a freshman. When I was a freshman, we still had Brady Hoke as the coach, and then we brought Harbaugh on. And so, like, we were kind of waiting for the Harbaugh victory for 4 years, didn't get it, lost to Ohio State every single one. And then once I graduated, we started beating Ohio State. And then, you know, this year was really the cherry on top. So
definitely.
I'm still waiting for that Penn State win.
Yeah.
You might be waiting for a little while.
Yeah, it might be a few years away.
We'll see.
That's unrivaled. Crazy. That so when did, like, social media first catch your eye? Obviously, like, working in marketing, right?
Yeah, so I'm a brand manager. So it's not so much like traditional marketing that you think of with, like, advertising, social media. Like, that's a part of it. But, like, my role is a lot more of, like, managing a brand within a larger portfolio or a larger company. So, like, you act as kind of the brand owner within an organization. So, you know, we're doing everything from, like, product strategy to just total strategy to working with sales to sell it in, working with product developers to actually develop the product, and then working with like comms teams, social media teams to launch it. So it's a lot more entrepreneurial. So that's what attracted me to it. In terms of social media, I mean, I think over the past few years, it's really insane to see what the creator space has become and how much it's grown and frankly, how much money is in it, but like for the right reasons. Like people aren't sitting watching TV as much anymore. They're on their phone consuming media. And so like that's where the eyeballs are and that's where the kind of money's going and the conversions are happening in terms of like, I see this brand I like, I'm buying it. And I saw how much we were paying like on the brand side to these creators. And I was kind of like, well, how hard can it be? Not to like downplay content creation, because I've learned a lot. There is a lot of work behind it, editing stuff. There's a creative element, strategic element. But like, I kind of wanted to throw my hat in the ring. I had been like looking for a side hustle. I think, you know, we live in like a hustle culture now where everyone always like wants to do something outside. And it was something that was kind of tied to my day job that I had had some experience in. So that's like how I initially started, was I just kind of started messy, started posting like TikToks and kind of saw what worked, what didn't work. And then eventually like expanded to Instagram and now like other platforms. And I think it's been a crazy like learning process, but it's been a fun one. So
What was like the initial response that you got when you started posting on TikTok?
Yeah, I mean, I think like the first barrier you have to get over with kind of posting is that like people are going to see it.
Yeah.
Like, and you don't know, like you're kind of putting out like a bunch of random stuff and like, you know, you're going to be perceived differently. And I think you have to be like really comfortable with that. And I think that that's something that like you kind of get better at with like the whole content creation journey, is just like being open to feedback and understanding that people might not like you and people might not like your content. But if you can understand why and maybe like adjust it and like give them more of what they want, I think you can kind of create a space where you can actually build a community of people that are like supportive and engaged. So when I started, like, I think I was doing a lot of like lower lift, kind of lower quality kind of things, where it was like videos of me with like what I thought was like a funny caption or a funny sound. And like, to me, that was like less intrusive of my life, or like I had to put less of myself out there. But then slowly over time, what I realized is, you know, people want to get to know you. They want to know more about you. So like, I kind of started to do that more. Obviously, Kirkland's a big hit. Like,
we get the star of the show coming up right now.
I mean, I won't sugarcoat it. Like, he's the star for sure.
I think it's hilarious. You watch like your videos and like now, right? It's, if you post a video that does not have Kirkland in it, people are like, where's Kirkland? We do not give a fuck about you.
They're like, yeah, no, it's so true. And so then I'd say like, I went down this pipeline of like, it kind of became a dog account, which like I was fine with. Like, he's great. It was like a way that like took the spotlight off of me a little bit and allowed me to kind of grow and have fun and give people what they want. And, but the interesting thing is, what I find is like, they kind of do like the combo. Like, if I post a video that's like just him, it actually doesn't perform as well as like the two of us. Like, it's that kind of juxtaposition that I think people have latched onto. But you're right. Like, there are some people that comment on my videos like, I didn't even know who this was until Kirkland came in the frame.
You're just Kirkland's owner.
Yeah, I'm Kirkland's dad, which I'm, you know, I'm happy to be. But I think like recently, like in at this stage in the content journey, it's a little bit more about how can I put myself a little bit more in the spotlight. While he's always going to be a part of the show, just kind of having more of an even balance.
Do you think that your background, you know, going to a prestigious university, taking academics seriously and getting a good job in like an entrepreneurial space in marketing helped you take that like technical approach and like learning to, you know, A/B test things, like kind of take a more strategic approach to your content?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I don't think I could have done it without having kind of the more traditional path where I've gotten like the kind of behind the scene looks at like how to grow a brand. That being said, like, I do think there's a difference between like trying to grow like a brand with a business objective and like more of like a personal account that is not like trying to necessarily sell something. But I do think like a lot of the brand strategy stuff is the same. I think like, in the same way a business is trying to give a promise to like a customer, like I think when you're a content creator, like you have to be providing value to like an audience and a customer as well, whether that's a laugh and entertainment or whether it's inspiration with like a routine or you know, something to do in say like a city. So I think there's a lot of different ways of providing values, but I think it's, what do you have? You have something to say?
You said Kirkland couldn't talk. I don't think I believe you.
Kirkland, what do you think about making TikToks?
You got to translate for us?
Or? Yeah, I think he's like, he knows who's paying the bills. Oh, he's bringing the dollars in and it's him.
Kirkland, do you ever feel like that Matt's taking advantage of you and using you for fame?
See, he's media trained. He's been asked that question before.
Head down.
He's like, no comment.
That's amazing. Yeah, no, that's very fascinating. And I think like we're kind of talking about, a lot of creators don't have the brand experience. So they kind of think it's a one size fits all, which it's not, right? And so like having your intentions from the start seems like it's benefited you. And like, do you want to like talk about like exactly what those intentions were? Like when you started, was it like, you know what, I'm just going to try this out, I think it's fascinating, there's opportunity here? Or is like, I think I really want to grow something personal brand that is separate from the brand side, right? And just grow an audience.
Yeah. I mean, I think my intentions at the start was like, I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. My parents, like I said, like they moved here from Italy. My dad didn't go to college. My mom didn't go to college. They both started their own companies. My mom is a hairdresser, has a hair salon in Newton that she's run for like 30 plus years. My dad was helping to support my grandparents who opened an Italian restaurant up in New Hampshire. And then simultaneously was like building out a real estate career, like starting with just like agent, got into like development and such. So like, I've always had this like entrepreneurial passion. That being said, my parents really always wanted to push me to go and get the things they couldn't. So I got the college education. I went to business school. I joined like corporate America. And I think I've learned a lot, but I don't think that entrepreneurial spirit has like gone away. And this was kind of a way to start that. Like when, you know, a lot of people you hear talk about like how they grew their business, it started as a side hustle. They were doing it in the 5 to 9 after their 9 to 5s, were probably applying things they've learned. But like they slowly let it grow. And I think like, I don't like to say that like, you know, my platforms are a business in the sense that like, it's just about the money, but it is kind of like what I said before, where it's like, I want to give a promise to like a group of people and like grow something. And so I think like, that's been my intention, is like being able to, yes, like grow my own brand, something I'm in charge of that can ultimately then like sustain itself. But I think like the audience is key, not me. It's what I'm able to kind of provide to them. Again, whether it's a cute video of the dog, whether it's an inspirational video of like my routine or background or whatever. So I think like that's what sparked it.
There's something about that, like coming, like family coming from another country, that just breeds entrepreneurship that I just love.
Yeah.
Like I think a lot of people can relate to that. And like coming from Europe or just anywhere, right? And just trying to start something in America where there's so much opportunity in any generation. Like even right now, I mean, it's totally different than, you know, last century, right? With technology and social media. But I just think that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think like that was kind of the only option. Like if you couldn't go to college, like you weren't getting these more white collar jobs. So like, you know, you kind of had to kind of do your own thing. And buddy,
stop.
And like, I think like you see less of that today because I think more people are going to university. I think university is becoming more of like the high school where it's like kind of the more of the norm. And I think you've seen less of that like entrepreneur that like didn't have a ton of other options. That being said, they're definitely out there, but I think there is almost like a value to starting from nothing or not having nothing, because you're more willing to take the risks, put in the work, because there's less to lose. Whereas I think when you get down this pipeline of like, I went to college and I've worked at my company for 5 years and I've really made progress, but like maybe you're not where you want to be, you do want to be the CEO, not like a middle manager. Like, I mean, most CEOs, and maybe this is not true, but like most of the high ups at companies, like, we're the ones that took the risk, jumped and started something and took the that kind of entrepreneurial leap of faith. And I think that it's hard in current culture to, like, feel secure doing that when you get super comfortable.
Where do you see, like, your career going then? Because, you know, you talk about growing your TikTok as an entrepreneur, but then you also talk about these C-suite roles where you need, you know, a great business school education, which you have. Do you have, like, any desire to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, or do you want to grow your own thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think I did. I think it takes, like, a lot of work to do it, and not saying, like, I'm work averse. I'm very the opposite, but, like, I think return on energy. Like, it's the same concept as return on investment, but, like, how do you get more on the work you're putting in? I think going more of, like, the founder route is actually a more effective way to get there, because you kind of take out the politics, you take out the years of, like, you have to work in this job for X amount of years to get here. It's a lot more of, like, action-based learning, I guess, where it's, like, you're learning the real stuff and you're getting to take on so much more. So, like, if it's your own company, and then you're, like, you're the executive because you're in a two-person team. Mm-hmm. Like, and then ideally it grows to a point where, like, you have a full staff and you maintain kind of that executive position. So, I mean, in terms of my career, I think I see more of my corporate job as, like, a learning opportunity, like, learn as much as I can from a corporation, but, like, start to kind of build out more of an entrepreneurial platform, you know, whether it's content creation. I also advise for startups in, like, the food and beverage space. So that's, like, a cool little outlet. But, like, ideally, I would love to start my own brand someday that I could then grow and manage. And, you know, that's where I see myself getting more to an executive level versus, like, in a traditional company at this point in my life.
It's a lot more. It can be a lot more exponential.
Yeah,
it's not always.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of, like, times it doesn't work out, but I feel like the upside is there, and the exponential growth, like, the exponential upside, is definitely what is attractive to a lot of people. And
yeah,
you know,
totally.
What makes the crazy success stories, and not even crazy, but the success stories that you see every day.
Yeah,
with entrepreneurship.
And you can fail. Like, I think the other thing is, like, corporate's always there, so it's like you can take the sidestep, do your own thing. If you fail, you fail, as long as you learn. Like, corporations eat that back up. Like, hey, like, yeah, I went and tried to start my own business. It didn't work. And this is why. And this is how I think I can now benefit this business or this organization. And, like, no experience is wasted experience as long as you're able to take something away from it. So I think, like, even I think failures are some of the best things you can have. I listen to a lot of podcasts. Most of them say, like, you fail 3 times before you have, like, success. So, like, I think not being afraid of that has that complete potential upside. And, you know, if it does work out, then great. But, like, I think there's corporate's never going to go away. So you shouldn't be too scared of, like, I guess, breaking that.
Can you touch on, because, like, I didn't go to college, always been, like, entrepreneurship route. And, like, for me, and, like, what's been fed to me as information, and,
yeah,
like, I've digested and, like, is second nature now, is that failure is okay. Failure is totally good. I like it. You know, it's part of the game of life, of business, of everything, right? I've always had the, like, thought in my mind that in corporate, like, that was not the case.
I think he just started the Apple Play. I think he hit it with his nose.
With the no Apple way.
Pod. Yeah.
You want to listen to some music?
That's electric.
Yeah, he went and just hit it. I watched him.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you knew what you were doing.
Oh yeah, Kirkland, come on up here. Kirkland, you might have an answer for this.
Yeah.
But so, like, from your experience, how is the failure treated in, like, the corporate environment? Is it mostly good, like you're talking about, or is it different than the entrepreneurial space?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on your company. In my experience, like, if you're at a larger company, like, you know, a Pepsi or, like, an Anheuser-Busch, like, there are times when, like, failure can be bad, where, like, you know, they'll lay off a person because of some sort of program. At my company specifically, failure is kind of celebrated, where it means you're taking a risk, you're taking a swing. There is potential that, like, it didn't work out. And as long as you're able to kind of have that feedback loop or that learning loop where you're able to take a look at it, what didn't work, and apply it for the future, then, like, that's still a win. So I think that, and like, I would even like equate it to say like content. Like if a video flops, like that's more helpful to me than when a video pops off. Like if a video just doesn't do well, I'm able to take a look at it and be like, okay, well, was it maybe the intro? Was it the hook? It wasn't a compelling hook. Was it like the quality of the video? Was it the content of the video? Like you're able to kind of hone in more than when like a video just like explodes and you're like, well, I don't really know. Like you can try and recreate it identically and it just doesn't perform the same. So like, I think failure is a much better teacher than success.
It tells you what not to do in the social media case.
Yeah.
You're spot on with that. That's interesting. Talk about some of the biggest, we can also go the lowest performing videos, but like, what has been the patterns in your content that you've learned so far, you know, with Kirkland or with yourself or, you know, just in general?
Yeah. I'd say like, it's really interesting now expanding to different platforms, seeing kind of the differences, but there are some things that are consistent. I'd say like, overall, like you have to be putting content out there consistently and like look at your content as kind of like a portfolio. Like not every single one is going to go viral and they shouldn't. But when you do have that one that does go viral, then people are now tuning into your channel to see what else you have. So like it's kind of like a rising tide raises all ships situation where like when a video of say him pops off, then someone's like, oh, who is this person? They tune in and now they're seeing all of the other kind of videos, and then they're ultimately deciding whether they opt in by like following or not and keep going. So I think like that's one consistent thing is like, don't look for virality, look to build community, look to build kind of like a consistent style, try new things. Like there's ways to try new things but staying consistent, like new formats, new types of videos. But yeah, I think don't let like numbers dissuade you. And I've seen like, you know, it kind of happens cyclically. Like when I'm like hot on TikTok, I'm hot. Then sometimes it cools down, like, and then sometimes it takes back off again. And you kind of just got to ride the wave of it and not let it like dissuade you or get you to stop. As long as you're like also still learning, you know, like why might this dip be happening? Like, did I maybe over advertise this month and put too many sponsored content, like sponsored videos out there and people like didn't like it. And then now I have to adjust with organic. But in terms of like what videos perform the best, I'd say, and this actually might be surprising. So number one videos are me and Kirkland. Like it's showing us both. It could be a day in the life. It could be me giving a bath, something like that. Those are like, that's the goal. Number two is actually videos of just me, like where it's me going to work or me giving a recommendation about Boston or a travel kind of vlog or something like that. And then the least performing, actually, he'll have ones that pop up, like he has his community, but like just him actually doesn't perform as highly as me and him. Like, because I think the thing with pet accounts is they are a little bit a dime a dozen. Like you see a bunch of them and there's always like kind of like a new dog or a new cat, but like there's not a ton of loyalty or distinction. So like when I'm in the video too, I'm almost acting as his like distinction from the other world of wiener dogs on TikTok. So it's a little surprising, I'd say, like, but that's what I've found kind of the ranking of the genres of videos.
You've obviously like spoken about your like posting on social media, like you have, there's a science behind it, and it seems like you've like came in with a very strong approach, and you knew what you were doing with your personal brand. So like, when did you start monetizing, and like how did you start monetizing your TikTok?
Yeah,
well, or I love social media in general.
First off, I love that it appears that way, because I will say like I thought I was coming into this knowing shit. Like I learned everything along the way. Like there were some elements that I knew, but like, I'd say actually my personal branding was terrible at the beginning. Like it didn't really make sense. Like I wanted to post funny things, but people wanted to see more lifestyle things. And then the dog was in the mix. So I thought I was all over the place. I've put a lot of like work into like now stepping back and in defining that. Like if I were to describe myself, like I'm a guy that lives in Boston that has a wiener dog. And like my content is about like lifestyle and entertainment. It's there to like give you like a look at lifestyle, but like have a laugh along the way. But that's something that like took me probably 9 months to like actually figure out and start executing against. But it's great that like it seems that way. And then in terms of like brand deal stuff, so I started monetizing actually pretty early. So I started posting consistently in March of 2023. I think I got my first brand deal. Granted, it was like a few hundred bucks in April or May. And that was like very like UGC, like product focus, where like, you know, I was making a video around a product. It didn't really perform well on my channel, but like it allowed me to kind of like start to build a resume. And then I kind of like, I took a lot of free stuff, a lot of free products, a lot of like smaller dollars. Like it wasn't like, you know, you're starting bankrolling everything in the beginning. But like that allowed me again to like build a portfolio that then I could take to bigger brands. Most of them were inbound. So like I have like an email in my bios that like would bring a brand to me. And yeah, and I use the fact that I'm a brand manager as a selling point. Like I tell them like, hey, I can make the content, but actually let's take a step back. Like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to drive awareness? Are you trying to drive conversion? Are you just solely needing content to populate on your page? And then I can then adhere their goals into a piece of content that feels genuine and authentic to a viewer, but in a way that still has the brand tie. And I think that's where a lot of brands go wrong, is like they'll tell creators what to do. And I think that's the best way to make a failing piece of content. Like if you're aligning with a creator, like use their brand to support yours and use their insights and their creativity to promote the brand. Don't tell them what to do, because it feels inauthentic.
And yeah, that's something I've noticed about your content a lot. Like I've been on the advertising side of like brands and UGC and just like understanding that space for the past 3 years, 4 years right now. And I've seen terrible examples and I've seen great examples. And I think your stuff is very close to the top. I
appreciate it.
Just like, you know, connecting with your audience and the brand and just like making something that works for both. And most people can't do both of those things at once. And like, obviously because of your brand understanding and because of the understanding you've, you know, gained on TikTok from doing it and from just putting in the consistent work, you've been able to kind of crack that code, you know, to the best of your ability.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And I always worry that like, you know, sometimes one might come off more as like an ad and it might turn people off. And I think that's okay. I think as long as you're, again, like I'm a big proponent of just like continue to learn, continue to optimize. If you fail or you turn someone off, that's okay. Just like keep the blinders on, go forward. But yeah, and that's something that honestly, like you asked me like, where do I see like a future of this? Like I'd love to do some sort of consulting where I'm helping creators do that. Like I am helping to do that like translation between a brand and a creator, to find ways to organically integrate brands into their content in a way that again pays back to the brand. I think that like as the creator economy continues to evolve, I think they're saying it's like going to continue to triple through 2025. So like it's not too late to enter the game. It's like it's just the beginning still. Like I think there's going to be a greater need for that. So that's like one thing I have my eye on.
Yeah, I mean you know this firsthand, like we've talked about this, but like the most powerful marketing vehicle right now for brands is content creators.
Yeah. If you do it right.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's funny when you see like newer brands that will just like throw a ton of money at like a creator and they'll just like post about it and it doesn't do anything. I think now it's becoming more of a science and brands are paying more attention to it. Like the smart brands are looking at the key success.
Kirkland's got a sock.
Yeah, he found it. He loves socks.
He can have that sock. Kirkland, that is your sock to keep.
Makes himself at home.
What are some of the brands that you think do like a great job at this that you have your eye on?
Yeah, I mean, so not to like promote our own, but I think Twisted Tea. That brand is a brand that has been around since 2001. And if you guys grew up in the Boston area, you might have like remembered it as maybe like your first entry to alcohol. It's easy to drink. It was like not a beer. It's like something familiar, but like it's been around for a while, but like it is now like the number one FMB, which is flavored malt beverage. And to put that in perspective, it's like a top 10 beer brand. So like bigger than some of the other beer brands you think. And that growth has all happened, or at least really accelerated in the past few years. And I think a lot of it was driven by like the social media presence and building out a community that like not only loves the product, but loves like the brand promise, which is about just like having a good time. It strips away this like idea of like, I have to be so manicured and put together. It's about just like letting loose, having a good time, being twisted. Like you see a lot of their contents, like meme content, content creators that like, you know, Twisted Tea's in the video, but it doesn't look like an ad. So I think they've done a really good job. And like, I was on the team at a little bit, but like, if you guys ever remember like the Twisted Tea smack when the guy gets like the smack in the convenience store, I don't know if you guys ever saw it.
You were too young for that.
I am too young. Yeah.
No, this was like 2 years ago.
Oh, God, I don't even know.
So basically there was a guy in a convenience store buying a Twisted Tea, and there was a guy in front of him just turning around, like yelling racial slurs at him. And this guy takes the Twisted Tea 24 ounce and just smacks him across the face. Like thing explodes. And that like became like the number three most
that actually happened.
Moment. Yeah, it happened. Oh. It was captured on video.
Oh, I thought that you were—that was like an ad campaign.
No. I thought, but like that set the brand like kind of didn't have as much awareness, and everyone was like, it just became like a meme, and like the brand not supporting either side, obviously, because there's the violence element and obviously racism. It's a touchy subject, but they rode the wave of like it becoming memed and like leaned into the internet culture. And
you have to accept that.
Yeah. Like people were making like Call of Duty like memes where it was like new weapon unlock and it was like a Twisted Tea can. So like it just became the internet took it, and it honestly stopped even being about like the actual event and just more of like Twisted Tea was like a secret weapon or something, and people just
it humanizes the brand.
Yeah,
which is huge.
Yeah, so if you look at their social, they do a good job. I think other brands that I've worked with that do a good job of it is Hatch. They're like that alarm clock. Mm-hmm. They started as like being like a baby like sound machine. They've now like expanded into owning like all of sleep, so they make like adult ones. They basically let me do whatever I want. Like obviously they review it and stuff, but like they're giving me like, hey, these are the key things that we want to communicate. This is the product and this is like kind of what we're going for, and they really trust me to integrate it in an organic way. And those are my highest performing videos. Some are hitting 2 million, a few hundred thousand. They're like consistently performing well, and it's because they really have trusted me to kind of integrate it in an organic way.
What are your thoughts on, and we can cut this if you can't or don't want to talk about it, but like Happy Dad?
Yeah, I can talk about it. I think what Happy Dad does really well is leveraging their audience to kind of build a product around a community. I think that, again, like it's a good example of this kind of creator economy of like the brands that are going to win are going to be the ones that win with kind of creators and win in the digital space. That being said, like I think that Happy Dad is really good at that, but maybe needs more of like the brand or like the more traditional kind of brand setup, because you know, I think alcohol is also a tough industry. You have a lot of stakeholders. You got wholesalers which like distribute it, you got the people like actually making the product, like, and then you have like where you actually buy it. So like it's a really fragmented system that's honestly been in place since Prohibition, and it's just like a difficult space. But I think like Happy Dad does really well with the consumer first, but in terms of like the back end alcohol industry, I think it's a little tougher when you're so kind of forward thinking, or not forward thinking, but like so consumer forward. Like there are some like just traditional elements of the alcohol industry, sure, that haven't changed. So I mean, I think they're doing good, like compared to like all the seltzers that like have dropped out. Like, I mean, you see everyone and your mom made a seltzer like a few years ago. It was like every beer brand made a seltzer, like everything made a seltzer. And for them to be like one of the only growing ones still is like definitely impressive. I think it's just like, how do they continue to build it in a sustainable way so that it has more of a long-term kind of potential. Buddy, come over here.
What about like Prime? I think Prime is like the pinnacle of this new style of creator economy, creator brands.
Yeah.
And like just what they're doing is very innovative. Yeah. and crushing.
I agree. And they don't have like, I think Prime's a great example next to Happy Dad, where it's like they don't have all of the baggage of the alcohol industry. It's a lot more like direct to consumer. So they're able to, you know, work with a manufacturer, a distributor. Those are usually kind of like the same in the non-alcohol industry. So the same person making it is like shipping it. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's going through like a distribution company. But it's just a lot easier. There's less hands in the pot, less stakeholders you have to make happy. So like when they're winning with the consumer, they're able to convert and grow really quickly. I think, you know, comparing it to a Happy Dad, like you Google like the three-tier system, it's like the supplier has to sell to a wholesaler, which then can sell to a retailer. But like you got to make each of them happy, and it can just be hard navigating that system.
Yeah, and especially like so I was just in Vegas for Super Bowl week.
Yeah.
And was at a Gatorade event. And it was really
the celebrity flag football game.
That was separate. That was a different thing. So just one of the things we happened to do that week was go to this Gatorade party, and I was really fascinated by, I mean, obviously they're going to have influencers and creators there, but like it seemed like Gatorade is scared of Prime very much.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, they've been dominant for so long, but they have to figure it out now and you know, figure out how to adapt and change to like these newcomers in the market that are like not just like, you know, oh, they might do a couple sales, but like they're actually like pretty dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, all of these small independent companies are pretty disruptive. So like Gatorade is owned by Pepsi. So I used to like report into the same like overall team when I was at Mountain Dew. And like, it's so true. I mean, you see the Celsius is coming in and like disrupting energy. Prime disrupting this like hydration, better for you beverage. I mean, when Gatorade started, like I hate to say it, like it was just sugar water. I think they've innovated outside of it, and they've done a really good job maintaining their brand around performance and like elite athletes and all that. But like, yeah, I mean, if a new product comes in with a promise that they're not delivering on, then like they have to innovate. And I think they take it very seriously. I also think though at that level, like acquisition's probably like still a big lever that they can pull at any point, because, and I think honestly, like that might be the goal of something like a Prime, where you do want to be acquired by greater beverage. I mean, if you do the math, like most beverages are owned by the same two companies, and it's Coke and Pepsi. So like it might be a good thing, but I think like from Pepsi's perspective, they're probably going to try and build it out internally first, see if they can win. And if not, then they kind of pull the acquisition card.
Sure.
That
would be crazy news if that,
the fear is real. Yeah.
Like, yeah, Logan Paul would be up.
yeah, even more up than he already is. But I mean, Celsius, like Pepsi taking on its distribution, like that's stage one. Like they're now, okay, well, we'll at least get the distribution on the product. If it does well, then they'll slowly buy pieces. They did that with Rockstar. So like that's definitely is part of their strategy. So yeah, but I do. I think they're a real threat. I think disruption is coming at every industry, whether it's furniture or, you know, food and bev. It's kind of like nobody's safe. But that's a good thing. I think like it stimulates competition. It ultimately, what the hell is he having now?
Bottle cap.
It stimulates competition. It, it provides real innovation.
It's just a bottle cap.
Come over here, bud. Why don't you come sit? Yeah, he has ADHD. Well, we both do.
I think that makes four of us.
Yeah.
Well, they say ADHD is a secret sauce to creativity.
I completely agree with that.
So, and, you know, work ethic, I think. You can't sit still.
Right?
Right, bud?
Kirkland, what do you got to say?
Want to come here? I'd say something.
Kirkland, what's it like being the most famous dog on TikTok in Boston? We'll go with that.
Kirkland, has Matt used you to pick up any girls?
Yeah, right answer. That's the right
answer. Shoves the mic away. You guys have gone over that one a couple times, right?
Yeah, right? He's media trained. Yeah, good. You're loyal. He's scared.
Kirkland, who's your best friend in the building? Ooh.
I think he said Richard.
He loves the... Well, actually, he doesn't really fuck with Richard for some reason. I don't know why. But, I mean, they have kind of like a love-hate thing. Like, Richard will come at him, and then he gets a little aggressive, and then they kind of go toe-to-toe. I mean, I love Richard. I don't know. Yeah, but you know who he loves? He loves the Nops. He loves going every time that we... or the Cops? Nops? What
did I say? Yeah, Cops.
Cops, yeah, he loves the Cops. Every time we leave, he goes right to their door. He just like, because we live on the same floor.
It's something about Stubby's, right?
Yeah, he loves. That's probably it. He probably smells the fried food on their jacket, and just goes in there.
Kirkland's got a good life.
Yeah, he does. He doesn't even.
He works hard though. He works hard for your content.
He does. He does. I do put him to work. He pays his bills. He pays his end. He.
Is he a write-off? Like, seriously, were you making money off of him? Could you write him off on your
like
taxes?
Like, vet bills? Or, like, as claim him as a dependent? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think I can claim him as a dependent. No, I mean, honestly, he kind of gets a lot of, like, we get a lot of food company, dog food companies reach out, just send free food. So, like, that's a big help. In vet bills, I pay. I don't know if you can write off those. But I mean, maybe if I got him like a benefits package, but
you get Kirkland like vet sponsorships.
Yeah, right. Well, we could
get that boy on a billboard. That.
He pulls his weight.
Yeah, he brings in. He's got his brands.
What's his favorite sponsorship that you guys have done so far?
I'd say probably he. Let me see. What did we do? He likes this like one, so it's like a toy that like you put like a frozen treat inside. I think it's by Woof is the name of the company, and like they're called like popsicles. So like you freeze like a little ball of peanut butter and then you put it in this like rubber contraption. He will go to town like for hours on it, and then he'll like, if I put it away, he's like barking. If I like put it in the sink to watch it, he's like barking at the sink like relentlessly. So I'd say that's probably his favorite sponsorship that he's had. And it saves him from, you know, tearing up my pillows and other stuff. So it's a pretty good toy for him.
He just winked at us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll do that. Yeah. He lives a good life. I mean, I've taken him out to LA, once, like I flew him there and back. Then we went to San Diego. So last year I was in between leases. I used to live in Southie. And then before I moved into this building, I like moved my shit into my parents' house and just like traveled around for a few months. And he came with me. He is a trooper on the plane. Like, he loves to travel. You take him down to Florida a bunch. He hops in the car, comes up to like New Hampshire, Vermont with me. So yeah, I mean, he's been on an airplane more than maybe some Americans. You know, it's,
that's crazy.
He's got it good. I don't know if he knows it, but
was he a passport bro?
Yeah, I mean, we got to work on his pass. We got to get him a passport and take him. I want to take him nomad. To like Puerto Rico, but I guess you don't need a passport there.
It's true, yeah.
But it is funny, like his personality that you see, like with the voiceovers, like is truly his personality. Like, he's extremely stubborn, but at the same time, like very loving. Like, he can be a little bit like wittier, like. He's kind of like a Sour Patch Kid. Like, first he's sour, then he's sweet. And it's always funny, like, people will comment on my videos, like, when it's, like, me, and they're like, we don't want you. Like, you're not funny. Your dog's funny. And I'm like, I hate to break it to you, but, like, my dog can't really talk. So that's, like, always a fun one.
I don't think he liked you saying that. Yeah, like, come on, bad, really? You're exposing my secrets? How did you initially come up with that tone and like talk about the thought process on, you know, showing his character and making it not just you talking in a different voice, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say building his personal brand was easier than my own. Like, I think, like, again, I'm a brand manager, so I'm used to like taking something and like defining it in a way and like executing it. I think when you're like doing it for yourself, it's a lot harder because you're like, well, I like this and I'm like this. Like, you know yourself the best. But like I was able to establish him pretty quickly because, you know, he has this naivety to him. Like, he doesn't really know the world, but like he thinks he knows the world. Like, if it was up to him, he would pull me into the middle of the street. Like, he loves to run in the middle of the street. Like, and he, like, that's what he wants. Like, if I'm pulling him on the leash and he's pulling me back, it's because he wants to jump in front of a car. Like, so like, and there's like a playful element to that where it's like, he thinks he knows everything, but he really knows nothing. So like, that was one part of it. I think like he knows he's cute and he like equips that. So like he will like, you know, if it's like me giving him a bath, he'll be like, you know, use your puppy dog eyes and then escape. Like he knows he's cute. He's self-aware. And then, you know, I think there's a little bit of a Napoleon complex to him where he's got a bigger bark than he is. I mean, he's 11 pounds and is extremely cute and not even remotely intimidating, but like he thinks that he is, and like, he'll take on the biggest dog at the park. Like, he'll start barking at them, and then the second they like turn around, he like runs behind me. But so I think like just looking at him and his persona, and like a lot of it's typical of like the dachshund breed, I was able to kind of craft a voice. I will say like I've definitely like didn't come up with it all on my own. Like, I looked to inspiration, like saw a lot of other similar like dog like voiceover videos. And like kind of took some inspiration. I don't think there's any problem with like taking inspiration nowadays. Like,
best artist steal.
Yeah, it's like, what did they say? Yeah, best artist steal.
What I mean, there's a book too that Steal Like an Artist that I have that I've always read. Like, as a creative, like, you need to do that.
Yeah, it's like bad people copy, good people steal.
Something like
that. And like the thought behind it is like, if you copy it just like word for word, or like just take it and put it on your own, it doesn't perform. But if you're able to like steal the idea and integrate it into like your own iteration or like remix, you could say,
sure,
then like that's where the money is at, because it's like you're taking something and putting your own spin to it. So absolutely. So yeah, which is like kind of what I'm trying to do with like the lifestyle content too. Like, I know there's like this perception of like these lifestyle influencers that is like, everyone's like, oh my God, like this person gets paid to make their bed. And it's like, no one cares that you're going to Equinox. And like, I think there's truth in that. But like, I do think some people do like to see a peek into that life. So like, how do you do it in a way that's like, if you're going to make fun of me, like, let me help you make fun of me. Like, I will shit on myself. Like, I will kind of tone it down in a way that it's like, okay, yeah, it's still like doing these things, but it's a little more self-aware. And like, that's where I think like the lifestyle with a laugh kind of comes in, where it's not just like about me. It's like, how do I make this both inspirational and like entertaining for a viewer? And I think like, that's my version of like putting a spin on this like lifestyle influencer. Also, my favorite accounts to follow are like, you know, the Pointer Brothers, like the funny accounts, like Fibula is like, if you know, I want Fibula to be my best friend, like I'd love to meet him. But like, those are like the style that I like opt into. But like, that's not necessarily like the style that like, say, my followers like. So like, if I'm able to kind of blend kind of the two of them, then I think that's something that's like a little bit unique and ownable to me.
100%. What are some of your, you know, at this point in your career as a content creator working in, you know, brand, what are some of your goals going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote out a lot this year. I think like one thing I want to start doing more of is like stuff like this, like doing more like collaborations, interviewing, kind of more behind the scenes stuff. Like, I think that's one big goal for me. I think like not to like put like a metric on like success, but like I think like 100K is like the next kind of thing I'm chasing for. Like, I know followers can be a little bit of a vanity metric. You know, I think like as long as your viewership is high and your engagement is high, like that's what you should target. But like, I also think there is like, when you're working with brands, like not everyone is like, some people are just more ignorant to like what is a good social media stat. So like, following does have its place. And so like, I would love to hit 100K by the end of this year on both like Instagram and TikTok. I'd say those are like more tangible goals. I think that I want to build out YouTube, like do a little bit more longer form content. That's another goal. And I think just like continuing to understand what it is that like my audience wants and continue to deliver on that in a way that just gets better and better, like higher quality, more tailored or custom to their need. Like, again, like less about me and more about kind of the audience. So I'd say those are like some both like quantitative and qualitative goals that I have for this year. And like, I think like the whole quitting full-time job for a lot of people is a goal. I think that, you know, it's something that I've considered. Like I am transparently at a point where like I could be doing content full-time. However, I do think that like having a full-time job is like kind of part of my promise. It's like, it is me balancing both things. It's like, I am just a guy working a job and I like what I do. So I think that there is this like trope that happens when people go from like the part-time influencer to the full-time influencer, that their day turns into just them doing their appointments and like doing that. And like, I don't know that I would ever want to do that. I think if I did leave my full-time job, I would still be working. It just maybe wouldn't be for like the corporation. It would be doing like my own consulting or propping up my own business. Like, there's always going to be that aspect. So like, I think right now it's all just kind of like when the time's right. I'm still happy with what I'm doing. I'm engaged. I'm excited by it. And until one starts taking away from the other, and I can like manage them both, then I'll try and keep doing that as long as I can. So,
cool.
Great.
That's all right. I think that might be it. Unless you have anything else that you want to put on the table before we wrap it up, but I think that was very insightful.
Yeah,
good story, background, and just like good high level conversation.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
You did really well. Like, that was one of the better guests we've had.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And anytime you guys want me back, you know where to find me.
Oh, 100%.
Not far.